This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/east today for details. That's EEAST.
Welcome to East Meets West, episode 189. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
This is the unconscious edition. Both of us are just back from the Consumer Electronics Show 2010. Do you say 2010 or 2010?
I say 2010 because it sounds snappier.
It was funny. I said 2010 most of the time, but then every once in a while, old habits would kick in and I'd say 2010, like just happened here. But so we were both actually passed out. And we're just talking in our sleep for this episode, essentially.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting because 2010 was kind of the make it or break it. A lot of people were saying for CES because 2009 was so low in attendance and kind of new products. I don't know. I saw maybe a bump increase in the number of people, but I don't know if it's like what it was.
I thought there were fewer exhibitors by far.
They
didn't have the Sands Expo, and they didn't have people. They had very few people out in the parking lot. Almost everything was actually in the Las Vegas Convention Center.
So definitely not as big as it was even, say, 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah. But plenty of people.
Yeah.
It was packed with people. And so if you're looking at it as an index of the economy, I feel like it was more positive this year than it was last year. Last year, there were empty booths where people had actually signed up for a booth and then pulled out at the last minute. I did not see anything like that this year.
You know, I was actually hoping to get better hotel rates.
I didn't see that either.
Yeah, that's the one thing. I mean, especially with hotels and lodging, you would think those would be more.
But it's Vegas.
I know.
And so people want to go there anyway. So it's not like Consumer Electronics Show isn't, you know, if the Consumer Electronics Show wasn't there, then yeah, okay, the hotel rates go way down. But when it's just a little less, like, they can fill that up with vacationers, no problem.
Maybe, but they have to offer the incentive because, you know, people, you know, just because people can doesn't mean they want to spend the money, especially if they're unsure about long-term employment.
Well, I'm just saying there's enough demand that there are people who will spend the money. And I was talking to the cabbies. Last year, the cabbies were all bemoaning the fact that they had nobody on New Year's Eve. They kept talking about New Year's Eve and how, like, wow, it was really bad. Nobody was out. You know, we were all dying for fares. This year, a couple cabbies I talked to said, no, you know what? It was quite a bit better. It's still not, you know, 100%, but it was a lot better than last year.
Well, you know, it's funny because I just kind of always looked at Vegas and kind of Dubai because they're both kind of in the desert and sand. But there's a lot
of
money.
Invented.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of money that goes into building the buildings, infrastructure, and all that. And they're both hurting for the same reasons. What's that one building in Vegas, that huge, it looked like it was going to be a large hotel, but they stopped mid-construction because they ran out of money?
Yeah.
I'm wondering if things like that, I mean, at what point do the people who still own the plot of land in the building are responsible for it, or have the investors kind of washed their hands of it and say, well,
most of the time when I've actually seen that happen in other other towns, and the most of the time they end up finishing it. They just put it on hold because it's so costly at the moment, and they wait for prices to come down, labor prices to come down, and the ability to turn it around to come back. I've seen those buildings finish. The one time it didn't, Intel was building a building in downtown Austin and pulled out. And so the people who were responsible for constructing it for Intel were kind of left
on the hook.
On the hook. I mean, Intel bought them out. It's not like Intel like welched on it, but they essentially didn't have enough money to finish the building. So I can't remember for sure what happened to that building, if someone else came in and they finished it or if they ended up tearing it down. But it was sitting half built for quite a while.
Yeah.
After the dot-com bust.
I don't know. It's interesting how people, I mean, realty is such a bellwether for the way, or at least the perception of the way the economy is performing. Because, you know, when you need to build a large skyscraper or even a hotel, you got to put up a lot of money up front.
In Dubai, they just put up the Burj Dubai. It's the tallest building in the world. Tallest inhabited building and tallest structure, both at the same time.
And then what was Abu or the United Arab Emirates? Who bought them out? Who basically underwrote the, remember a lot of those real estate investments in Dubai were in danger of falling under because
So
I was trying to remember, one of the neighboring countries basically guaranteed or backed the loans on those. So
cover story in The Economist this week was about the bubble, and they were using housing prices as a indicator that things are overinflated, that, you know, housing prices in Europe and UK, maybe we'll start that. That'll be a new thing. But the housing prices are above what they should be. When you compare, what they do is and I don't know how they go about doing this, but they essentially look at the rental market as an example of what people would normally pay, like as a valuation of property. Then they look at the housing market, see what things are selling for, and they make an equation to say, like, okay, it seems like things are selling for an equivalent of what they're valued in the rental market, and it's out of whack. In the United States, it's actually on par.
Well, now it is.
But in Europe and Germany, it has already bounced back to being ahead.
It's funny that you mentioned
the UK. So there's more of a bubble there than there is in the U.S. The U.S. is actually more conservative.
Because the bubble
and holding
popped.
Steady. Well, the bubble popped in Europe and Germany, too.
Well, it popped in Spain. It popped in UK and parts of Ireland.
Oh, it popped big in the UK.
But that's what I'm saying. The UK still has a growing bubble because you mentioned the UK.
Well, it's a new bubble. What The Economist is saying is, look, everybody's bubble popped. Everybody's been in a recession. But what's happening now is because of the cheap money and because of the stimulus packages, we're starting to see a new bubble start, and we need to be careful of that.
Well, it's interesting because I was reading on The Economist website, they were mentioning that about the Chinese housing market as well, that, you know, there is now property bubbles. And, you know, no large part that has to do with, you know, the liquidity, the amount of
money. You mean no small part?
No small part, sorry.
Yeah. It's no large part. It's actually a very small part.
it's a very important part because the government essentially, you know, all the, you know, when everyone is talking about the way, you know, the economy is picking up, and especially for China, is, you know, a lot of that demand's actually been stimulated by government loans and government grants. So, you know, countries like Australia, maybe, you know, that are resource intensive, in other words, they export raw material, minerals and stuff, have seen, you know, a gain in that. But, you know, after the government's tap is shut and the economy can still grow, then that's a good thing. But if it doesn't, and then you're kind of back at square one. So it's one of those things where I think people might need to look a little beyond like a 6 month or even a 12 month period. You want to look at least 2 years down the road.
Some comments at subbrilliant.com/EMW this week. Joshua Hill said, okay, so it's a new year, and I thought it was about time to ask what Tom and Roger, as well as the lovely listeners, are listening to as podcasts. He lists some of his favorites as iFanboy, Around Comics, and then Extra Life Radio, East Meets West, Forecast, and Buzz Out Loud. And then SoCal Jess got in the game. She's got some interesting one. Hitchhiker's Guide to British Sci-Fi.
Ooh,
hadn't heard of that. That sounds
pretty
good.
I need to find that one.
Movielicious, which I also listen to. The Low Life, L-O-H. Nah. Not familiar with that one. Adam Carolla, Current Geek Forecast, Doctor Who Podshock, and The Bite Club Show, which my wife does. So
that's cool.
What kind of podcasts do you listen to podcasts a lot?
I don't really listen to that many, mainly because I guess I'm so involved in putting up my shows that the last thing I want to do is listen.
It's like when I always use the example of when I worked at Pizza Hut and I didn't want to eat pizza anymore.
When I worked at GameSpot, I didn't want to play video games.
Yeah.
GameSpot, not GameStop. But I did listen to and ironically, they tended to be a Canadian podcast due in part because I wanted to kind of figure out the difference between, you know, regional Canadian and American accents. So I was just listening at first to kind of hear.
Just to listen to them talk.
Yeah, and then I just kind of started listening over. There was I wish I remembered it. When is the National Post? I know the National Post was a former Conrad Black and semi-conservative, but I do actually like their podcast. It's pretty intelligent. I used to, was it the Washington Post? Or was it the Wall Street Journal? I don't know. One of those that started with a W. I used to listen.
So the National Post, a Canadian one?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And then I would listen to a geek one, which was actually pretty cool, but I don't remember the name of it.
Techzilla?
No, I love Techzilla, though. And if you haven't, you should check it out. It's awesome. But truth be told, I actually like reading blog posts more than listening to audio podcasts because I tend to listen to like Pandora, and then I read.
I have been listening to podcasts more than I used to because I found I like to have it on when I'm at my desk for certain things. A lot of the time I'd rather have music, but when I'm doing like my finances, I like to have podcasts on. And when I'm at the gym, I listen to podcasts quite a bit. So I have been listening to... What are some of the ones I've been listening to the most? I always listen to Coverville, and that's a music podcast. So when I'm interested in, you know, I'm in the mood for music, often we'll listen to that. I've also just started checking out the Delta Park Project. It's a, I think, a husband and wife team, if not a boyfriend girlfriend, but they are pop culture experts.
Oh, nice!
What they say in their description?
Do they sound
like it? They're pretty good. Yeah, I think they're amateur experts, but they're pretty smart. And they talk about TV shows and movies and that sort of thing. It was a recommendation from somebody, and thank you for that recommendation. You know who you are. I listened to The Economist. They do a lot of different podcasts all in one feed. So like the week ahead, and
I usually listen ad hoc. Like I'll find one subject matter that really intrigues me, and I'll listen to it. But I don't listen to it on a regular basis, which I probably should.
Extra Life Radio, fantastic podcast about video games, movies, geeky stuff. Film Sack, another one from Scott Johnson, that just looks at some of the seedier, goofier, weirder movies that you get from Netflix.
I mean, it's pretty seedy, but was a mainstream movie. You remember the movie Crank with Rob Statham or Jason Statham?
Yeah.
So they had a sequel, Crank 2. You know.
That actually might be a good one for FilmSack.
It's an awesome movie. If you like the first Crank, I highly recommend the second one.
Well, FilmSack recently did Take a Hard Ride, Excalibur, Candyman, Clash of the Titans, Species 4, Alien Apocalypse. So, you know, just
they did Red Sonja was great.
They did Red
Sonja.
That
was Brigitte Nielsen's, I think, first breakout movie. And it actually featured Arnold Schwarzenegger, although he was not supposed to be Conan because I guess there was some sort of copyright or trademark infringement. But he looks like Conan, so you just assume he is.
Conan knockoff. Let's see. The Instance, World of Warcraft podcast, of course. The Transmission, Lost podcast.
Ooh, what's that?
Very good, good podcast about Lost. So,
if you start
watching Lost, they actually just went and did a kind of recap podcast where they went through previous seasons, episode like in like 3-episode chunks, reviewing the DVDs, kind of in a preparation for coming to this final season of Lost. So, if you did start to catch up, there you go. I also listened to the Movielicious, great podcast about current movies. Patrick Beja effort. Mr. Deity is a good one. It's a short, funny podcast with a comedian in LA who plays God. And it's him and his assistant. And there's, you know, other characters join him. And he kind of plays it in this sort of like he's God and he's, you know, he's got stuff to do and he's always like trying to get out of it. And his wife is Lucy. Get it?
Yeah.
Yeah. His son is around every once in a while.
Nice. But
it's kind of sitcom-ish, really funny.
That'd actually be kind of cool if there was a sitcom style, you know, even audio podcast like they used to do back in the grand old days.
That's essentially what Mr. Deity is, except in 6-minute bites, because it's harder to do. NASA cast. I'm an addict to it. It's only like 5 minutes a week, and it just gives you everything that's up at NASA. The Phileas Club. I've been listening to that for years. It's a great discussion podcast. Seminars about long-term thinking is often very interesting. And like you with The Economist, this is one where I'll listen to particular episodes if they tend to really catch my eye. The one I listened to most recently was Stuart Brand on Rethinking Green. So it's an hour and a half a lecture. Stuart Brand, one of the founders of the Whole Earth Catalog. He's the long-term thinking foundation.
Didn't he also start up The Well?
I think he was a co-founder of The Well. You're right. And Clock of the Long Now, all that stuff. But it was him saying like, hey, a lot of our green stuff that we've got going on is totally misguided.
Yes.
And this is what we actually need to be thinking about. He's a big proponent of nuclear power. at this point. He
talks, what about whale farming?
He talks about, he, I don't think he talked about whale farming, but he talks about what led him to change his mind about nuclear.
I kind of switched back when I watched this Nova episode on nuclear power in France. It was actually very interesting. It was very intriguing because, you know, France gets a majority of its electricity via nuclear power stations.
All right, let's. I'll finish my my list up, but let's take a quick break. Scam School, obviously, I have to listen to. This Week in Tech, This Week in Science with Dr. Kiki and Justin. Toy Break, a fantastic toys podcast, and I would like to say that I watch The Wood Whisperer more often, but I just don't do that much woodworking stuff, so I watch it and then I'm befuddled. But if you are into woodworking, he'll even make a dummy like me understand what he's talking about. So check it out, and there you go. All right,
we want to thank the sponsor for today's podcast, audible.com, the leading provider in spoken word entertainment. Audible has over 35,000 titles to choose from to be downloaded and played back anywhere, just like East meets West. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/east. That's EAST to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Again, go to audiblepodcast.com/east for your free audiobook.
And I just I'm like two pages away from finishing up Daniel Suarez's Freedom, which is available on Audible. Daniel Suarez wrote the book Demon, and if you don't know, I talked about this on Twit this week too, but Demon is a book about a guy who dies of cancer, I think, and but there's some suspicious behavior around his death.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they go to investigate, they uncover a computer demon that he set up that is triggered by the news of his death.
Oh, and nice.
It starts taking control of things based on what the investigation does. And they have to start fighting this demon and figure out what it's doing and stop it from growing. And Freedom is the book that just came out as the sequel to Demon.
Oh, nice. Is it narrated by the author?
It is narrated by Jeff Gerner. I do not know Jeff Gerner.
Hmm.
Maybe I should, but I don't. I am sadly ignorant of Jeff Gerner. But also done Star Wars, The Clone Wars, No Prisoners. The Clone Wars, Wild Space. He's done a lot of Star Wars. He's also done The Keep by Jennifer Egan.
What year did that book come out, The Keep?
The Keep, 2007.
Oh, okay.
The audiobook came out in 2007. I don't know when the original book came out, but so anyway, that'd be my pick. If I was looking for a book to read these days.
Sweet. Yeah, I was. I really need to get more audiobooks. Actually, physically reading things takes too much time for me.
Martin in London at subbrilliant.com/EMW pointed out that the Doctor Who episode, The End of Time Part 2, didn't air until January 1st in the UK. So I was wrong. I thought that they aired Part 1 on the 25th, Part 2 on the 26th. He says no. Part 2 aired on the 1st of January, so you didn't. BBC America didn't keep you waiting for a week, just one day.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I could have sworn that it aired on the 26th, but then you know what? That just goes to show that I did not go looking for the torrent of it, or I wouldn't have. I would have probably been made aware of that.
I cannot speak to either.
Have you not seen it?
I've seen it. Okay. I saw the end.
Yeah, yeah.
We talked about it last podcast.
Yeah, I know. That's what CES does to your brain, right there. That's an example.
Scrambled.
Cool B says, since a decade is technically just 10 years, pretty much any year could be said to start and or end a decade, pretty much arbitrary.
That's true, but I believe at least in the U.S., when you speak of a decade.
Not a decade.
Yes.
Not a decade of 10 years. The decade. The 90s.
Yes.
But he's got a good point here, right? Because if you say the decade of the 90s, then you think you should have all of the years that begin with 90.
Yep.
But then some people say, 1990 is actually the last year of the 80s.
No. Although, you know what? The truth be told, the actual decade, at least in cultural influences, tend to extend at least like in the 2 years past.
Well, right. Then, you've got your cultural decade.
You know, mullets were still in fashion in 92.
Yeah. If you go watch movies from like 1990... they are 80s movies.
Yes.
They are no different. And likewise, you know, movies in 1980, 70s movies.
Yeah.
For sure.
Up until 83, 84.
But it's because trends don't strictly follow decade guidelines.
So which raises the question, should we then shift, at least for things like VH1, I love the pick the decade, you shift it up and just make it from like 83 up to 93?
I love the 1983 through 1994 period. Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't, it's not as catchy. Yeah.
Because like, when did grunge take off? Like 94, 93?
I'd actually say grunge started to gather traction 92, because is it 91 or 92? But I think it was 92 when Nirvana came out with the big album. Smells Like Teen Spirit was a big hit. And that's when it hit the mainstream. But grunge was building even before that.
I know, but I mean,
so I would call it 92 for grunge's like.
Well, maybe 82 to 92 then.
Yeah. Well, we actually did a lot of thinking about this when I worked at WPGU for figuring out categories of music, because we were a rock station, and we had a clock, as you do in radio. A lot of people may not know this. I don't
like the doomsday clock.
No, it's just a clock where it's like you start off the hour with a new song, and then you play a song from. Basically, your new songs are A, B, and C, right? The A's are the hottest songs, B's are the second hottest songs, and the C's are usually new songs that just came out. So you start out with an A, then you play a B, then you play an oldie, and then you play another oldie, then you play a C that's new, and then you play an oldie, because you want to surround the brand new stuff with stuff that's really familiar, so people are less likely to tune out. And you make your clock like that. But the oldies are usually broken down into different categories, so you don't end up playing like a bunch of songs from 1987 all in a row. Mm-hmm. And the way we broke it out was pre-1967, because we didn't play a lot of 50s rock. We didn't play a lot of Bill Haley and the Comets. So the stuff we had that was pre-1967 was its own category. Then 67 to 72, we identified as a thing. Like, those songs are similar. And then it was 72 to 77.
Right.
And then punk rock kind of became big in 77. And then I think we went 77 to 84 and 84 to present, because at the time it was, it was the period I was working there was 88 through 92. We totally chopped it up in like 5-year increments, trying to follow these musical patterns and the musical trends in rock.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have musical trends, but you also have fashion trends.
Yeah.
You have vocabulary that changes. And oftentimes, people tend to use a decade and they illustrate it by using some event, some big event. For example, in the 80s was the space shuttle disaster.
Sure. Or Reagan getting shot.
Or Reagan getting shot. Berlin falling, the Berlin Wall falling down.
That would be the 90s, right?
No, that was the late 80s.
No, you're right. That was late 80s. Russia was the 90s. Yeah.
And then 90s. And, so it's kind of hard to say, but I think maybe if we went by cultural, or at least make more sense.
But it's so hard, because fashion, music, historical events, they don't match up. Like, the trends in fashion don't fit with music. So we end up going with decades, because it's something everybody, it's kind of a shortcut. Everybody understands it. You say the 90s, everybody knows what you mean. But if you start to get too technical, then it's like, well, this fashion period went from 1976 through 1981, but the musical period went from 1977 to 1984.
Maybe we should base it on technology trends.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, is there an identity for the decade that just ended? And also, what do you call it? The O's?
Aughts, isn't that it?
The double aughts.
The aughts, double aughts. I don't know. That's always tricky. So, what do they do with the 1900s? They call it the 1900s?
Yeah.
Hey, it's the 1900s.
And then the teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s.
It's the 2000s.
It's the
2000s.
It's the 2000s. Yeah, I guess.
I always like to think it's the beginning of the 21st century.
Let's say we call it turn of the century, maybe. What's the characterization of this decade? Is it technology, or is it just because we both work in that I feel like that?
I don't know, but I mean, if you look at the turn of the 20th century, you had the industrial, you had
Oh man, dude, really? You're gonna go all the way back 100 years? Because I feel like I'm thinking like, well, the '50s reason. Was Bobby socks and rock and roll, and then the '60s was protests and hippies, and the '70s was disco and like bad pants
and long drives.
And, you know, the '80s was like
a lot of driving movies,
weird
in
pastels
the
and leg warmers, and the '90s was grunge rock and flannel, and the 2000s is
the nerd.
The That's nerd,
the black rimmed glasses.
I kind of think that too, and I want to double check myself, because I'm like, maybe that's just because I spent the entire decade living in San Francisco, and Oakland, and I've been working in tech this entire decade. So, is that true everywhere, or is that?
I think there's that period, especially I've noticed this personally, with just people I know. Like, there's a delayed, you know. Transition into adulthood, people.
Oh, that's been happening for a while. Yeah.
No, but I mean, like, people are in their 20, you know, 25 and 26.
Well, that's what I mean. It's been getting longer and longer. Over
so here. I mean, you know, I've noticed
hipsters. Yeah. Is hipsters the face of the decade?
I don't know. Do hipsters exist outside of large metropolitan areas?
Well, they never do. None of these trends ever do. Leg warmers. You know, a couple girls at school had them in Greenville, Illinois. But
it was the
big trend when you were in a major.
Major metropolitan area. San Francisco. Actually, San Francisco is small.
Yeah.
But, so I don't know, because I don't live outside those.
But
zones.
I feel like it's a New York thing, too, and actually a little bit of a London thing, too. So, yeah, it's the decade of the nerd. It's the hipster decade.
So
not tech so much. Tech is part of that.
But no, I agree with you. It's not solely technology, but I think it's kind of the transition where
the glasses
where intellectualism could become more mainstream than it, or at least the affectation of intellectualism could be more mainstream than it
and
used
then
to be.
musically
I would say it was a combination of very highly produced, you know, top 40s, you know staples, like,
well, that's true of every decade if you put it that broadly. But what do you mean particularly? Because there's a lot of indie rock seemed to become huge in this decade too. So
yeah, but indie rock was big in the '90s too. That's
not as much though. It got a foothold in the '90s, but I feel like it's like two pillars. It's almost like there were two mainstreams. There's the mainstream you're talking about with the top 40 stuff that's, you know, it's very produced.
Well, actually, musically, I would say it's a lot more segmented than it used to be.
Yeah.
I've noticed one thing is that what used to be called the alternative or progressive rock has suddenly become so many subgenres that may or may not have the same core audience.
Well, and that's why we use indie now, because it's basically so too much to be like, well, there's alternative and prog rock and prog country and alt country and hipster country and
Well, then you have
you just go, it's indie. They're all indie.
Well, even urban music, I mean, it's the same way. So, maybe it's the era of the great segmentation of or you know, delineation of all these music, because, you know, realistically, there were those subgenres before, but people just grouped them because people,
there weren't as many, people weren't aware as many of them, and I think the internet changed that, because anybody can be aware of any band.
That's true.
That doesn't mean they're all successful, but in that long tail sort of situation, you can be aware of a lot more subgenres than you used to be.
You ever watched the movie The Player?
Yeah.
So remember how they define every movie that they pitch by using older movie records?
Right.
It's like
right.
Queen of the Nile meets blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. It's like it's Star Wars meets The Sting.
Yeah. And it's, you know, at some point, I mean, do you run out of original ideas because there's so much previous material to draw from?
Well, yeah. I mean, people have been complaining about that in video games and movies for this entire decade. Like, all the movies are sequels.
Oh, could be it for movies, the sequel decade.
Yeah, I hesitate without checking to say, like, well, we've always had sequels have been going
Rocky
for a long
IV, Superman
time,
IV.
Right?
Yep.
So did we really have more? But it does feel like it, doesn't it? It does feel like we had more sequels this decade. And video games, name a video game that's not a sequel that's in the top 10. It's hard. BioShock's the last one I could think of. And now it's BioShock 2.
Yeah. Well, there's Batman Arkham Asylum. That should be up there.
Batman Arkham Asylum's not an original. It's based on a movie. I mean, it's based on a...
It's based on a comic book.
Comic book.
Oh, you mean?
I guess so. I guess that's not a sequel technically, but there've been Batman video games before.
So when you say
that's kind of a weird category.
So you think you're speaking of brand new intellectual property?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all of these. You know, there was a time when The Legend of Zelda was just The Legend of Zelda, and
there were a few.
And Mario was the newest Mario.
There were a few in the. You know, the 2000s. Unfortunately, they didn't do so hot. Yeah. But they were great games.
Left 4 Dead.
Left 4 Dead was good.
Yeah. It was Left 4 Dead is a good example of that. BioShock and Left 4 Dead. Yeah. All right, there's hope.
Maybe.
Movie-wise, there are lots of original movies. But the big-name movies definitely run multiple numbers, right? The Twilight series, because that's a book series. Harry Potter series, also a book series. But, you know... They want to get more than one out if they can. They always set it up for the sequel.
I know it's interesting to see how the next decade turns out, to see if we'll have a Avatar 2, you know, Avatar 3, or if you have the Avatar universe,
an Avatarist.
I'll be actually kind of cool if movies actually segment out the same way as. Music.
You know, actually, what I'm hoping is we'll see more segmentation of story, even on television.
Yes.
Where I think Lost has done a trailblazing thing that nobody gives them credit for by getting ABC to agree to an end date. And I think for that kind of storytelling, it's going to free us up to tell all these stories that we could never tell on television because the producers never knew when they were going to get canceled. And if more people can get that commitment out of a network, like, look, this is our story. It's going to run 3 years. We'll start to see all kinds of interesting niche stories that would never get told otherwise.
Hopefully. I don't know. Depending on the style of show and the network, it may or may not. Because, you know, Lost is a very expensive show to produce. I don't know if you could do that. If you cannot guarantee the kind of financial return that Lost.
Well, it's a riskier prospect, that's for sure. For a network to say, yes, we'll guarantee you 3 years. But what Lost wanted was not to be guaranteed 6 years. They wanted to be guaranteed not to go past 6 years. Essentially, they were like, look, if we have to finish up with a two-hour special a year early, we can do that. We know where this is going. What the problem was is they didn't know how far to advance the plot. When they thought, well, are they going to keep us dragging this out for 7 years, 8 years, 9 years? We need an end date. So that's one way to approach it, is to say, look, we're not saying you have to guarantee us 3 years of storytelling, but guarantee us that you won't go past 3 years. And then if we have to accelerate the storytelling to finish up because we get canceled, fine, we'll deal with that.
One thing I hope actually does have an end date is a lot of the reality television shows.
Yeah, they don't have any end date.
Well, no, the reason I say that is because I've noticed more and more coming out, and usually that's kind of a sign that it's peaking.
Yeah.
Right before people, okay, it's now time to jump. And I'm hoping, you know, it might not be another drama, not another cop show.
Also, major cast change or focus changes. Right? Mm-hmm. So when The Amazing Race stops following the same formula and starts to throw in a bunch of weird twists, when American Idol loses Paula Abdul, these are signs of the end times for series like that, I think.
I think at this point there's a glut of talent shows, there's a glut of reality shows, there's a glut of, actually in some ways, even maybe news, like the Daily Show, but Daily Show-esque. On like where it's less news and more entertainment, like on Fox and CNN.
I think we need more buddy cop shows. We don't have enough of those. We have all these serious cop shows, but
we need more fun, whimsical shows like Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
Yes, and 10 Speed and Brown Shoe.
That's the key. It all goes back to the 70s.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We are not, if you may have noticed, we're not streaming this one live on Twit this week because Twit was also at CES and packing up its stuff and heading back at our normal time that we would record. But we will be back next week. Watch us record the show live on Twit every Sunday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern at live.twit.tv. And thanks to everybody for commenting at subbrilliant.com/EMW. We'll see you later.
Bye.